Oh, yes, I could listen to this all day long. Mario Bauza and his Afro-Cuban jazz orchestra with El Manicero. We probably know this as the peanut vendor, but El Manicero was the name of his tune. That's from his 1993 album, My Time Is Now. The same year that he died in New York City at his home at the age of 82. Mario Bauza. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead. It is Free Your Mind Friday. And what are we doing on Free Your Mind? It is about giving you the space and the time to express yourself about something that is of major importance to you. And we are listening carefully. We want to hear you present your facts. We want to hear you present your case, if you're making one. Or we want the clarity of your commentary to shine through. And in this way, you become our in-house instructor. You're teaching us a thing or two. By way of expressing an opinion. 888-874-4888 is the number to call. There's so much that we can touch on, but my role is to do the traffic cop role. I'm here to regulate the traffic. But I'm interested in what is on your mind and what are you thinking and why are you thinking what you're thinking? That is the peer education that we engage in on this program. Again, 888-874-4888. It's Free Your Mind Friday. Jay from New York, you start us off.
Good afternoon, Eutrice. How are you doing?
Okay, Jay, how are you?
I'm doing good. I thought about you the other day. I was enjoying a beautiful bowl of lentil soup. And if I have lentil soup, you come into my sister.
Would you believe that that's what my lunch is going to be today? Lentil soup.
And it's going to be a beautiful lunch. Two things. Number one, they say that the Mueller report is going to come to an end pretty soon. And I'm wondering, what is really going to come out of it? What do the American people expect from it? What do the American people like to see? I don't think that there's going to be any proof of collusion in regards to the president. I'm hoping that there is some sort of proof in regards to collusion with his daughter, son-in-law, and two sons, and maybe some others. But the more and more you witness what has happened over this period of time, even if those things do come to pass, I just don't see how it's really going to affect the re-election of this character. For some reason, I just think the American people don't get it. They don't see what's happening to the country and what he's doing to the country. And the sad thing is, I don't think that the Democratic Party has the intellect, the intelligence, or the wherewithal to put forward a message to get him out of office if these things come to truth. I mean, you got Roger Stone, you got Manafort, you got all of these other individuals who have been involved in these shenanigans. And if you notice, the Democrats still don't have a message to attack the president to where as they would make him seem like the second coming of Richard Nixon.
Well,
It just
one of the
amazes.
things that they might be doing, this is just conjecture on my part, is that they're waiting, like everybody else. Everybody is waiting to see what is in the report. And whatever is in the report that they can use as a platform to launch a counterattack, that's really what they want to do. They don't want to, be ahead of the report and then look like idiots if what they are reacting to is not even in the report. So,
you know, I agree with
everybody is waiting to see where this report is going and how best could the report serve the party's needs.
And that's why I think that the way that Nancy Pelosi has handled this impeachment thing, I agree with. There's no reason to even talk about impeachment, like you said, until the report is present and these committees are able to finish doing their work. Now, the one thing that I am noticing is that these committees that they are putting forward to try and gather information, it seems like it's going pretty good. I think they're doing a thorough job. I think they're doing it kind of meticulous. And
we don't know what kind of job they're doing. For all we know, they may be doing a hatchet job. We don't know. All we have to do is wait and see.
They're doing a good job.
We just have to wait and see.
I think that the main thing that I would like to see is I want to see what's happening with the taxes, because the taxes will show a lot. Now, last question is this to you, Utrice. I think the state of Washington has made it to where, as if the president does not show his taxes, he could not be on the ballot. Do you think that other states will follow suit and maybe do that?
Well, we don't know. We don't know what they will likely do. The state of Washington has it. This is a matter that they have deliberated on and taken a position on. But they're not the rule, they're the exception so far. Most states do not have the same approach. It's a matter of, again, we have to wait and see what comes. And then see how they treat the results of this report and what they intend to do with it. Are there smoking guns in this report? We don't know.
Utrice, one last thing. Do you think it's possible soon you could maybe get Joe Horn to come on?
We already arranged that. We already arranged that. He is feverishly trying to finish up his books. He'll be with us very shortly.
Utrice, I was saying trying to get him on the show to do a discussion on this reparations movement that's going on, because I know you probably have a lot of ideas on it that you're not speaking about it right now because of the way that you like to see things play out, because it's getting kind of interesting, this whole reparations movement. And I can't wait to hear your analysis, because I know it's coming soon.
Thank you. And it is. It is coming soon. And thanks a lot for your concern. Moki from Connecticut, you're on the air.
Greetings. How
Greetings
are you doing
to
today?
You.
Thank you. Utrice, I would like to see a movement started, and I would even lend some of my waning energy to this, to eradicate standard time. As you know, Hawaii does not use standard time anymore. They don't fall back in November, and neither do parts of Arizona. I would guess this is for tourism. But if I was in the insurance business, say I was an actuary, I'd be able to tell you if when November comes and we do not fall back, but spring ahead again, into something I would call super daylight savings. And then in the spring, in March, we would simply fall back to daylight savings. So I don't know if I made the picture clear. We go one step farther than Hawaii and Arizona. And back to the actuary, fewer accidents in the dark on the way home from work, far less depression in the winter months. So it would have a lot
of... You've thought about this quite a bit, I see.
Well, I've thought about a lot of other things, but I'm not getting anywhere on those topics. And I, maybe this is an end run, you know?
Well, you know, this daylight savings time thing has always puzzled me, especially coming from a country where you just have time. You know, it's one time. Yeah. Everybody is on the same time. And we're okay with it. We don't have to put clocks backward or forward or sideways. We're just not into any of that. So it took quite a while. It still hasn't sunk into me thoroughly yet. I still have to wait for instructions. You know, I have to look at the news to find out, you know, what do we do with this daylight savings time and you get an extra hour. I don't get it. But I guess there was some kind of a rationale for it. I don't know what it is, but it wouldn't make sense that the whole country is on the same time. But then again, you have a nation like Russia with 11 time zones.
Mm.
Literally, it is a whole day difference from one part to the other. So they seem to manage it. Yeah. I don't understand the mechanics of it. Somebody's going to have to explain that, and I think that right there calls for a program. Why do we have daylight savings time?
Mm. Because everyone gets too depressed.
Yeah, well, there are only four time zones wide. If a country like Russia could manage it, the shift in time zones and figure out what to do, maybe we could figure out what to do.
Utrecht, time is an illusion. And so we're all, you know, slavishly obedient and dependent upon Greenwich Mean Time. I think it has a lot to do with the financial district in London or maybe New York. Remember that people in San Francisco involved with the stock market, at least it used to be true, I don't know with modern technology if that's changed. They leave work at 8 p.m. They commute home and they eat dinner by 9:30 or 10.
Yeah, but that was their solution. Our solution is different. And time, I would argue, is not an illusion. I mean, if you're doing it in the esoteric sense and you arguing in the philosophic sense, okay, you know, we can play with that. But somewhere, we have to have some kind of agreement on what time we are following.
I think, you know, it should revert back to daylight, nighttime, you know, sunrise, sunset. But as long as we're dealing with this silly system,
the sun rises at a different time, depending on where you are, and the sun sets at a different time, depending on where you are. This is a great anomaly of the world.
But
how do we normalize as best as possible this thing called time, so that everybody, in one way or the other, we all kind of working on the same time frame? Pardon the pun.
I suggest we follow the model of those two states and then go one step farther. And just think about the outcomes. We'd have more light between November and March, and I think that would have a lot of very positive benefits. The two that I'm thinking of right now are fewer accidents in the dark. We don't need the light as much in the morning. Assumedly, we wake up bright-eyed and bushy-tailed and go to work alert. And then after work, we're tired. And we commute home in the dark and we get more accidents. And I think the depression level would also be changed for the better. To go an extra hour into daylight savings in November instead of falling back.
Very interesting. Well, we'll see what people are thinking about that. But thanks, it's an interesting idea. Thank you. Gwen from New York, you're on the air.
Hi, Therese.
Hello.
Hi, Therese. How are you?
Okay. So what's on your mind that you're freeing up today?
Okay, I'm really freeing this up, okay? So everybody get out of the way. I really, really am mad at first my generation for letting their kids, and I know we live in a tough environment with getting apartments, but I don't think you should be having your kid sleeping in your house when he's 40 years old, and I just think that's a terrible idea. And the other idea that this is my really hair trigger one that I'm really, really upset about is I'm so sick of meeting girls anywhere from 15 to, 25 or 30 saying that they're not going to get married. They're having their baby. They have a boyfriend. They have a baby. They're not going to get married. They don't have a plan. There's no plan of action. And they're just going to fly by the seat of their pants and see what happens, because many times mommy and daddy will jump in and they'll get in front of this train that's about to hit them. And I think that it sends a terrible message. To me, it's a real downfall for women, period, that young women feel that they are so worthless. They're not even worth marrying. And it also is really a sad take on the state of marriage. And I think that these rituals have been around for thousands of years, and they have a lot of value. I'm not saying that anyone should head into a bad marriage or they should stay in a bad marriage, but I think that women that don't think about anything other than themselves, because often what I hear is, I'm having this baby because I want one person in the world that's going to love me. Like, I don't think I'm going to find a boyfriend, so I just want one person that's going to be mine. That's a terrible reason, in my opinion, to have a baby. Babies need love. They need stability. They need means to raise them. And guess what? Two parents are really optimal. Little boys really do need their fathers. They really do like to have their fathers. Little girls do, too. And I think that it throws families totally out of, totally into chaos when this happens, because it brings, first of all, much depression to older people that can't believe this is happening, grandparents that don't get it. And the fact that we have to worry, you worry about your children, you worry about what their future is. And it just seems that it's a very selfish idea on many levels to me, and that I do believe in the nuclear family. I really do. I see lots of people that have, kids out of wedlock. I mean, I think that the grand experiment, which is really what we're in the midst of right now, we won't see the results for at least 10 years. We won't see what happens when, you get pregnant and you don't have any idea of how you're going to take care of the baby. There's no health insurance. I work with a woman, a young woman, who comes in looking very haggard. And, she can't work. She can only work 4 days because she has a small child. She does not have a system in place where somebody else can take care of that child. She can't afford insurance for herself because she's paying for insurance for the child. But what happens if the mother gets sick? She has a 70-year-old man living with her to help keep up expenses. But, like, who wants that? You're 27 years old. Why would you want that? But I just think that in our society today that we see our nuclear family really, really dissipating quickly. And I think that it is a symptom of the state of chaos that our country is in. I think we're in chaos on every single level. And, it starts at the top of the president. But this has been something that's been going on for a while. And I think that I might sound like a square bear, but
we're trying to get a sense of how you came to these points of view. What, in your view, is objectionable about kids living in their parents' house?
Well, I guess I think that from what I see, it makes them codependent for the rest of their life. They don't have a good handle on how tough the world is. And so they really don't know what's going to happen when their parents die, leave this planet. They don't really have an idea of what's going on in the real world, because guess what? In the real world, you have to write checks, you have to pay rent, you have to get it in on time, And I see that so many, I met a 24-year-old person who never wrote a check before. Well, she lives with her mother and father. She never had to write a check. And they don't have a lot of money. But I think that that young people that are living on their own are developing a sense of strength, that they have to depend on themselves, self-reliance. And I just see them as stronger people for, you know, you that are taking in the world. I mean, there's many people that were, you know, younger that went, I'm talking about, you know, in the 60s and 70s, my mother, you know, in the 40s. Sure, you go from living with your family to getting married and living with your husband. But there's a lot of opportunities today, and women don't have to just jump out of their parents' house and get married. But I just think that it's a very enabling relationship, and I also think that the parents that are doing this are ingratiating themselves. They're doing it more for themselves than they are for their child many times because they want their child home. It's easy. Gosh. You have a friend.
I mean, you've jumped to a lot of conclusions here without...
I have. And I've done a lot of observing, too. I've done a lot of observing. I have really have. And, you know, I tell you something. I hear Gary Null hit a lot of these issues sometimes.
That some people, you know, making a judgment in their own way, that rather than pay somebody else, it's just them, you know, it's just them, it makes more sense economically if, you know, they don't mind people ribbing them and people giving them some strange looks. But it makes sense on an economic basis if they can live in one domicile, share the expenses, and this way everybody profits. That it doesn't have to mean that because somebody is living at with their parents, that they're mooching off their parents.
That's not right. You're not right. If you start asking these kids, I go to work and I work with many, many young people, and almost all of them say to me, I don't have to pay any rent. I live at home. My mom and dad don't make me pay any rent. So most of them are not even paying any rent. So they're saving their money.
How representative are they of this style of living? Do they speak for everybody?
No, they don't speak for everybody. But I think if you sat down with 20 people that were living with their parents, I bet you 17 of them would tell you, I'm living at home because it's easier, because I don't have to pay any rent. That means I can spend more money on me, the narcissist, so I can, you know, do more stuff for me. And it just, I think, has just really become a generation of entitlement.
What age are you talking about? Many people I know who they don't necessarily live at home with their parents, but they've considered the idea. I know one man who lived with his parents, and a good thing it was, because he ended up taking care of both of them.
I mean, somebody my age, you are right. I'm not talking about people. My parents are in their 90s. Sooner or later, one of us is going to have to move at home with them to make sure they get out of the world in a positive way. So I think that is completely different than what I'm discussing. When I'm not talking about people that are in their 50s or their 60s, or even people that have, you know, parents that are staying home because they're ill. I'm talking about healthy parents that are in their 40s or 50s that are saying to the kids, look, stay home. This is good for me because I'm, you know, I don't have to, like, miss you when you're gone. I don't have to worry. You stay home and we'll pay the bills and you just enjoy your life because we want you only to enjoy your life. We don't want you to, you know, we don't want anything else for you. And I'll tell you something, it gets tricky on a lot of different levels. You know, I hate to tell you, but a lot of young people like to be intimate. They want to have a boyfriend over, but they can't really do that with their mother and father there. It's kind of not very comfortable, so you don't really end up, you don't really know where your kids end up. But I think to me that, you know, my mom was a very tough mother. And I tell you that I really hated her for throwing me out when she did. When I, you know, I was not a happy teenager, but I have to say that I got my own apartment. I started having a lot of responsibilities very young, but I always had a job. I always paid my rent. I know how it is. When my husband died, guess what? I already knew what it was like to live alone, so I was equipped for it. I didn't, you know, fall apart financially and not know what I was doing. So I know that my mother in her 90s, to me, may have given me some lessons that I didn't find them very pleasant when she, you know, when she was doling out this wonderful 1970s philosophies. But, you know, now in my life, I know that I can count on myself for almost everything. I'm pretty self-sufficient. And I'm pretty sure that if my mother had given me the choice, as a matter of fact, I know if my mother said, you can just stay home until you want to leave, I would have just stayed home until today. I wouldn't have left at all. I was very comfortable. And my life has been uncomfortable, but it's a discomfort that made me move on and made me go to bigger goals. I mean, you know, I've run for city council 3 times. I just ran for another public office. I mean, these are things that I don't think that I could have been able to do had my mother not instilled a sense of independence and that spirit of, yes, you can, but you're going to have to work for it. And you can't stay at home and us, you know, fluff your pillows and make your life great. And I'll tell you one other thing that my mother told me as a woman who, my mother told every single one of us, there's 4 girls in our family, and she told us often and told us from the time we were very young, do not ever come in this house if you're pregnant because I will not be raising anybody else's children. I will not do it. I have raised 5 of my own, and I'm not raising yours. If you want to have children, that's great, but you're responsible for them. And you know what? And my parents, you know, saw things in a different world. They also had date night every Saturday night. Nobody interfered, and they never took us on their vacations. My parents said that if the mother and father are not happy and not in love with each other, then the whole family will fall apart. So there had to be times that they had together just for themselves. And I kind of feel like, you know, I understand this. I find that a lot of people get married and they just, all they do is dote on their children and they forget about their relationship. And then they end up in divorce. And I think children really like it when their parents are together.
That's
my opinion. You said free your mind and I'm freeing it.
You know, the thing is that we also have to remember we're going through a really scary transition period. Societally,
yes.
Where all kinds of things are in the mix and people are fashioning all kinds of ways simply to live. We don't, on a regular basis, we don't stop to consider that we are, in fact, in a changing society. And there are things that we will end up having to deal with that we didn't anticipate having to deal with. I had my own apartment when I was 20.
Me too.
I had exactly one twin-size bed and one teeny tiny table. That was my furniture and a bookcase. That was it. But I was the happiest person on the planet. And yet I was raised the exact opposite way. In West Indian culture, especially when you're female, you are staying in the house with mom and dad until somebody dies. But I had a different idea. But I felt comfortable with that idea. And it was very scary. I have bills now to pay. I had to have a job, which I found, and, you know, you have to exist. But I was not geared for single life. I was geared to be able to live anywhere under most any circumstance, but it was not the expected life. The expected life is you grow up and you get married and you have children. And I didn't want any of that.
Right.
None of it did I. I still ended up having to do it because although I have no children, I have taken care of enough children. You know, I have had to take care of people. Although that was not my intention at all. It just came into my life. You have to deal with it, life as it comes to you. You know, I was not prepared, nor did I want to do that. I had other plans. And then life happens. And so we also have to consider that when we're looking from the outside in, that's one thing, but it's a whole different ballgame when you're looking from the inside out. Life is happening to people at incredible speeds and with all kinds of calamities that we don't see from day to day. And after a while, you get to just come to the conclusion, look, I'll cope with it as best as I can when it happens. And that's, you had to just leave it at that. I will cope with it as best as I can when it happens. I'm not going to worry. I'm not going to get a stroke over things I cannot control, people I cannot persuade. You leave that all alone. And to the best of your ability, you handle what is given to you the best way you can. Thanks for your call today.
Thank you.
Thank you. 888-874-4888. We take this little break and we come right back to your thoughts. When you free your mind, let's hear what happens when you free your mind. Listening to Lead Stories on PRN.FM. I'm Eutrice Lead. It's Friday, but as usual, it is Free Your Mind Friday. It's an open forum. You talk about anything you want to. You can go wherever you wish. You can stray. You can do whatever you want to do. You choose your subject and you tell us what's on your mind. You know, very interesting things happen when we just allow our feelings to dictate where we go. I like that, and I like the idea that people are confident in the integrity of the program enough to just share their private and intimate thoughts about things. I'm not saying that that's what you ought to do. I'm saying that it is a measure of how far we have come together as a program where you can express your thoughts, which is to me a great, great compliment, where people feel safe enough to just speak their truth, whatever that is, without anybody making judgments or whatnot, but more intrigued about how you came to the place that you are now and what you're thinking now. That is to be by far the more intriguing aspect of an open forum where people have been talking. 888-874-4888 is the number to call. I was expecting some topical issues, but it's fine. Whatever you want to talk about, that's the whole thing. There are no rules today. Whatever you wish to speak about. David from Brooklyn, what do you wish to
yes,
get
good
off
afternoon,
the-
Eutrice. I want to remind everyone that you're going to be in New York in May, the 26th of May, which is a Sunday, and the Global Affairs Committee that's going to have your program at Community Church in New York, which is at 40 East 35th Street between Park and Madison Avenue. So I'm looking forward to being there, and I'm hopeful that many of the worldwide audience that you have will be in New York on the 26th of May. I hope people are planning to be there on that date, and we're going to have a fabulous time there. And that is the 26th of May this year, and at Community Church there on 40 East 35th Street. So that's on my mind, and I just want people to put that on their calendar and consider coming to this fantastic meeting to meet the fabulous Utrecht Sleed.
Well, you know, last year I was totally flabbergasted. It was such a large crowd, which was one thing. But then It was the energy.
Oh, yes, fantastic energy. And energy. It was a large crowd last year, and it's going to be even larger this time. And I'm looking for people coming in from all over the world to be there for that day, the 26th of May this year.
Thank you for doing this. I'm glad that you took it upon yourself to do a PSA for the event. It is going to be something that I look forward to. I really am looking forward to being there. I remembered that last year we literally had to shut down the church.
It's going to be different. We're going to have more time, and we're going to have refreshments after the event. Will be available. We're going to have Jamaican patties and things of that sort, and healthy drinks, you know, juice and so forth. So it's going to be even better, and it's going to be a fabulous time. And you know, people can start arriving at 12:30, you know, to register and so forth. So we're going to have a fabulous time. So put that on your calendar, no matter where in the world you are, to be in New York to the fabulous meeting that's going to be on the 26th of May.
Thank you so much. You know, I have to confess something. I'm really, despite what you hear, I'm really a very, very shy person. And when this kind of affection comes my way in numbers, I don't know what to do. I have no, you know, you want to get up and run. Because, you know, there's just so many people coming to you with such good energy, and we're all in the same place having such a great time. And it's a simple matter of coming together. That's all it is.
That's so, it's wonderful. It's wonderful.
I'm looking forward to it this year. So I will remember to tout it myself again.
Okay.
Thank you, David.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye. It's true. You would never believe that this Miss Mouth over here, in certain circumstances, I am just terribly overwhelmed when people respond that way. And I'm saying, okay, that's enough. It's enough. But it was just an extraordinary exchange of good vibes, people just wanting to talk. And we just wanted to be with each other. And that, to me, is an extraordinary thing and a great testament to what we're doing. And I'm hoping to push the program a little bit more so that we create an even larger community of people interested in just talking to each other. That's That's the big purpose of this program, just talking to each other and commiserating. We sharing ideas, we sharing our feelings, we sharing our views. And in a sense, that too is an intimate experience, because in most radio programs, you don't get to do that. You just don't. Somebody talks and you listen, and then the program ends and they move on. But we want to change that. We want to be able to talk to each other frankly and openly, and with, of course, mutual respect. 888-874-4888. There's lots of time. Well, not too much time, but there's enough time for a few more calls that we can take. So I want to talk about just what going back to what Gwen was talking about. I was raised, just to share this with you, I was raised in a pretty large family. There were 9 of us, 7 boys and 2 girls, me and my sister. And we had these we had these sessions. I didn't know that this was not normal for, you know, for families. But my father would, without warning, hold what he called constitutional talks. And these were life lessons. He would kind of, we were to report to the living room at 7 o'clock sharp. You're standing there with your bag of books in front of you and in the order of your birth. I'm number 7 and of 9. So going down, each child had to account for yourself. You had to produce evidence that you were on the right track, that you were getting good grades. And then he would tell us what we did in school. We have no idea, although I did find out one thing that he did do was meet the headmaster for the boys. They'd meet in a bar. He'd get the lowdown on everybody. So that by Saturday, you are already, I mean, all that needs to be known about you for the week is known. And he would quiz us, and he would put us through all kinds of drills to make sure that we were on track with all kinds of things, dealing with our schoolwork. But then came the largest portion of the night, which was called Lessons in Life. And mind you, you're standing there. And it may be 8 o'clock when he starts this portion of it, but you're not going anywhere until about 2 a.m, standing right there, not moving. You can't take a bathroom break. You can't go get a cup of water, nothing. You're standing there and you're being spoken to. And in the Lessons in Life part, he would always tell us that you have to have, this is how he would say, you have to have book sense and common sense. And you have to have for yourself, something of a plan, something of an idea of what it is you want to do with your life. And you're fully in charge of that. Totally in charge of that. And that his job and my mother's job was to invest in what it is you want to do, and to believe in what it is we say we want to do. But on the other hand, if you wanted to be an idiot, we can go ahead and be an idiot. You can go right ahead and be an idiot, but just don't count on him in that event. You want to be a fool? Don't count on him. You want to be a thief? Don't count on him. You could count on him only when you want to do good things. You could count on him 100%. So that's how we grew up. And this went on for a long time. I thought this was what happened in every household. And then it was a shock to me when I spent a weekend over at my friend's house, and I was panicking when I saw the clock going to 7 o'clock, and I did not know how her father did constitutional talks. But then I found out it was my father. My father did this. This was his thing. And I must say, a splendid job. He and my mother, they were not well educated people. They were smart people. They were hardworking people. But they had vision, which was really important. They had vision for themselves and their children. And they were totally committed. Totally committed. No question about that. And so even though, you know, I'm a geezer now, I'm an old woman, there isn't a day that goes by that I don't somehow refer back to those lectures that we had as children. And what we were supposed to do with our lives. And how we were supposed to be of use to anybody. What we were supposed to do. It wasn't just about you, it was about your community and so forth. And he taught us that. So I'm going back to Gwen and her observations about, you know, the relationship between parents and children. It's complicated, of course. We don't know why parents have this lifelong obligation to their children. We don't know why some children don't care that their parents have an obligation to them. Some of them don't even recognize it. But in any event, it pays to pay attention. And in paying a close attention to these things, you find a source of strength in itself. I could not have imagined going out on my own at age 20. I mean, I barely had 2 cents to rub together, but I did find this little studio apartment, and my furniture was a little table with 2 chairs, a twin-sized bed that didn't even have a foundation on it, it was flat on the floor, and a bookcase. And I was the happiest person on the planet. I had practically nothing. And I was thrilled to death that I was envisioning and visualizing myself being on the way to something. But I was in charge of me. I was doing what I thought I wanted to do. And I was flying right. I wasn't doing anything stupid and scandalous, but I was trying my best to just fly right. That was a great, great boost to my confidence and to a sense of worth. Because you dismiss all the other things that people think are important. Because they're not important. What's important is that you can stand up by yourself. And you can take care of yourself. There may come a time when you may need somebody to help you. But it is not a permanent condition. You can take care of yourself. You live. Some people have an idea that, well, they need the latest model car. They need the best house in the best gated community. None of those things really mean anything to me. I like the idea of being quiet and contented and just appreciating life and the people in my life who are on my same wavelength, we hanging together. And that to me is worth all the gems and precious metals in the world. It really is important to me. So every now and then, I have to thank you, the listeners. It's not just that you're here and we meet up at 1 o'clock Monday through Friday and we talk about things. But it is that we excite each other's minds and we plant new ideas and we strengthen each other. Even if we disagree. See, that's not important whether we agree or disagree. It is important that we have a way of relating to each other that gives us the confidence to be frank and open with each other and what we are expressing, that it is respected, even when we disagree. That is a strength, because you're not being toyed with, you're not being conned, you're not being fooled. You're getting a true appraisal from me and from each other as to how we are interpreting what you're saying. And we challenge you to always go a little bit higher and higher. Push yourself. Develop the habit of reading and researching. And especially when it's free. I always encourage people, the Schomburg Center for Researching Black Culture in New York City is incredible. And yet every time I've been there, it's a lonely place. Very few people. It should be crowded. So, I don't know why I'm straining myself and going in this direction. But, sometimes thoughts just come to you and you feel a need to express them. I talked about my father. One of the greatest human beings I've ever met. He wasn't perfect or anything like that. This is not hero worshiping here. But this is, you step back and you see how this otherwise ordinary man and his ordinary wife embarked on life together, brought 9 miserable children into this world, and didn't desert us, didn't abandon us, did not discourage us in any way. did everything to strengthen us, to give us a sense of worth that defies description. I can't, there's nothing that really scares me. I could walk into the White House and feel perfectly comfortable. It doesn't intimidate me. These things that I see people getting intimidated, I'm not easily intimidated. And I know exactly where I got it from. So when you have some time, sit quietly and ponder. Parents are not perfect by any means. But you find there, in the middle of everything, you actually are connected or were connected to geniuses. Thanks a lot. It's the end of the week. Have yourselves a great weekend surrounded by people who put positive dimension into your life. And we'll see each other Monday. Bye-bye.